Hello, I am Joshua P. Warren, and this is Joshua P. Warren Daily. I want to tell you about a message I got yesterday that deals with a sensitive subject. Because of that, I'm going to either not use names or change names, but I do have permission to relate the information I'm going to give you. I received a message from a man who told me he had a compelling experience. Let's put it that way. He and his wife had a little daughter, and they decided to have a second child. And so his wife became pregnant with a boy. They even had a name picked out, and then she had a miscarriage, and she was devastated. It was such a painful thing because they were so looking forward to having this new son that in the years since this, they have continued to speak of the boy as though he lived. And I won't tell you the actual name they gave him, so we'll call him Bobby. So throughout these years, and I'm not sure exactly how many years it's been, several years, they have included Bobby when they have talked about their family, when they've had gatherings at holidays, that sort of thing. They always envisioned Bobby being there with them and growing up at a normal rate through time. Again, just as if he had lived instead of been miscarried. Well, a few days ago, this man was sitting on a bed with his daughter in the bedroom one night, and they had a tab. And they were playing around on the tab together. And later, he was going through his pictures on his telephone, or excuse me, on his cell phone. And he noticed there was a photograph that he didn't take. It was a photograph that was taken at the same time that he had been in the bedroom playing with his daughter on the tab, but it was from a weird angle. He called it an impossible angle. And guess what's in the picture? A little boy standing there in the room. Did you just get a cold chill? Because I did. I'm looking at this picture right now. And yeah, it's a little boy, and the picture has kind of a blurred, windswept look to it, like it was in motion. But it looks like a little boy there. He's wearing a burgundy shirt. He's wearing glasses, and so the guy who contacted me said, "Well, what do you think of this?" And you know, I sat there and I thought about it for a while. And I said, you know, I think there are lots of possibilities here, but I got to be honest with you, the first thing that comes to mind for me is a tulpa. And I sent him a link to some information that I had written about tulpas, and he read it and he said, "Yes, wow, I think you're right." Now, before I continue, I want you to take a look at this picture yourself, because I explicitly asked him if I could share this picture with you as long as I did not use actual names and all that. And he is so fascinated by all this, he said, "Yes, you have my permission." So if you would like to see this picture, go to joshuapwarren.com. There is no period after the P. Go to joshuapwarren.com. And then scroll all the way down to the bottom. And you're going to see just two little words without any other explanation. It's just going to say tulpa pick. I'm not going to give any other description. Only you will understand the context because you listen to this podcast. So you just click those little words that say tulpa pick, and this photograph will come up, and you will be one of the few people who gets to look at this for yourself. And you can tell me what you think. This, I believe, at very least, is a photograph of a tulpa, but it could also be a photograph of some kind of a spirit. Now, if indeed this is a tulpa, this is a very valuable picture from a research standpoint, because there's a lot that can be analyzed here in terms of how the camera angle is positioned, and again, that kind of odd motion-like effect that we have here. But what I want to do is take a moment, and you know, I love talking about tulpas. I want to take a moment here to share with you, by the way, sorry, I'm my throat's bothering me. They're still outside here doing all this pressure washing and stuff and stirring up a lot of allergens. Ugh. So anyway, I want to read you a little bit about tulpas, the same material that I shared with this man. And I know I've talked about tulpas a lot, but it's good to be reminded about this, especially an experiment that I did about tulpas. So, and a technique that you can use if you want to enhance your ability to see tulpas yourself and observe other aspects of the paranormal. So here is an article that I wrote about this that is also located on my website. Let me tell you about a simple experiment I conducted that may boggle your mind. First, a few things you should know. There are many types of ghostly manifestations. For example, entities are ghosts that seem aware and interactive, literally like conscious spirits of those who have passed. Imprints are ghosts that seem non-interactive and redundant, like dramatic impressions somehow recorded in the environment that replay themselves over and over again. But have you ever heard of a tulpa? A tulpa is a thought form created by the focused intent of a person or persons, which becomes so psychically impressed on the environment that others can actually see it. I'll give you a couple examples. The Philip experiment of the 1970s involved a number of Canadian researchers who wondered if a spirit could be created by human thought. They imagined a fictional character named Philip, a warrior who lived in the Middle Ages. They sketched a detailed photo of him and developed a complete profile of his history, life, and character, such as his wife's name, favorite food, experiences, etc. And thereafter, they spoke about him as if he were real. If there were a strange sound in a building, one might say, "Oh, there's Philip again." And after months of this, Philip began to gradually materialize, and eventually he fully manifested. Only then did they realize that creating an ass-kicking medieval warrior might have been a bad idea, since he began to abuse them. A similar scenario surrounds Walter Gibson, a prolific author of the 1930s who cranked out hundreds of novels featuring the shadow character at an incredible rate, often two or more per month for years. Decades after, residents of his Greenwich Village home claimed the place was haunted by his fictional characters. One might see the shadow sweeping down a hallway or a villain dash through a corridor. This phenomenon of living, conscious humans creating apparitions through mental focus is what the Tibetans have long called tulpas. The extent to which these tulpas are actually alive and free versus trapped in the initial mold which created them is a blurry and complex subject. No one knows for sure. However, Their existence might explain why strange creatures like Bigfoot are clearly observed, but are fleeting visions, obviously not part of the normal biological chain of creatures on this planet. In other words, if I buy a piece of property and say there is a Bigfoot living there, after enough years, people will actually begin to see him. But good luck capturing him. He would be a psychic impression, an extension and projection of the mental picture, somehow externalized and burned into the conscious, sensitive medium of the environment. The topic of tulpas is another fascinating element of ghostly phenomena that, conveniently enough, could explain much of the paranormal. But I must confess, the more research and experimentation I do, the more I think it may actually explain most of the paranormal. But don't take my word for it. Here is how you can see for yourself. In 2010, I was hired by Warner Brothers to be a technical consultant on their horror movie, The Apparition. The film was based on the idea of tulpa creation in a makeshift lab by inexperienced college students. While working on the production, my team and I employed some advanced techniques to create a tulpa by utilizing a vast plethora of gear to enhance human brainwaves. You can see the details by watching the extras on the Blu-ray version of The Apparition. Well, as it turns out, we were successful in manufacturing a dark, frightening specter that began to materialize days after our experiment ended. But that success made me wonder further about creating them in a more simple, organic way. After all, if tulpas are out there every day, their production does not require some specialized technical setup. And this led me to create the experiment that is the crux of this article, one I conducted on Saturday, December 7th, 2013, at my Asheville Mystery Museum in Asheville, North Carolina. As a part of the weekend workshop, I had 10 people, whom I shall now call subjects. The goal was to see if 9 of the subjects could quickly create a simple tulpa that the 10th could observe. And here is how the experiment was set up. One person, the receiver, was placed in a secure isolation. I then walked down a hall to a separate room, the tulpa room, that was set aside strictly for the purpose of containing our tulpa. In that room, I placed an object on the table, and then one by one, or sometimes as a couple, the 9 other subjects were invited to enter that room and fixate on the object for a few minutes, trying to burn its impression into the psychic environment. After each subject was done, I removed the object from the room and retrieved the receiver. The receiver was taken into the tulpa room and told only that an object had been placed on the table. Then the receiver was left there to contemplate until he or she was ready to come and tell us what he or she perceived the object to have been. Ideally, the receiver would, quote, see the tulpa of the object created by the 9 other subjects. For the very first round, I wanted to keep things as simple as possible. Instead of placing some elaborate object, I only wanted to see if the receiver could detect the coloring of the tulpa. Therefore, my first object was just a sheet of yellow construction paper. Now, once I placed the paper on the table, the 9 other subjects did not know what the object was until his or her turn to walk into the tulpa room and meditate on the item. Once all were done, I guided the first receiver, a woman named Donna, into the tulpa room. She came back a few minutes later, ready to share her vision of the object with the group. All I was hoping for was her perception of the color yellow. Instead, she surprised me. She said she had seen a brownish or yellowish box. That was quite startling, since it went one great step beyond color alone. I knew it was a flat, two-dimensional sheet of paper, but she was told it was, quote, an object. It seemed an obvious hit that she had not only seen a general color scheme, but a rectangular shape that she assumed must have been a box. Impressed, I decided to up the ante a bit and require a physical form description. For round two, the receiver was a man named Chris. Once he was placed in isolation, the object I chose was a roll of clear shipping tape with a red plastic dispenser tip. I placed it in the tulpa room on its side. It was obvious that the only real color was red. But being a roll of tape, I expected some kind of circular impression might be apparent in the tulpa. As before, the nine subjects entered the room and fixated. Once done, Chris was brought from isolation and put in the tulpa room. He was there less than a minute before he felt sure what he had seen. Chris told the group he had clearly seen a, quote, red triangle, end quote. At first, this was both exciting and disappointing. He had nailed the color, but he had missed the circular shape of the roll. Then, however, I pulled the roll of tape from my bag and the light bulb went off. The roll of clear tape is virtually invisible. And yet, lying on its side, the plastic dispenser is a vivid red triangle. The realization hit our entire group at once, and we actually spontaneously applauded the feat in awe. Now let me pause to say, if you go and you read this article on my website, you'll see some pictures of these objects. This article is under the Gallery of the Strange. So here's back to the article. These results are especially important since they tell us something crucial about tulpas. If these results were the product of another phenomenon like telepathy, Donna would have seen the piece of paper the same way we did. She would have said, I see a flat rectangle. But she interpreted it as a box because she was only seeing the shadowy tulpa. And when I told her the item was an object, she naturally assumed it would be something three-dimensional. If it were telepathy, Chris would have said it was a roll of tape, because that's how we subjects saw it. Instead, he described the red triangle, since that was the predominant aspect of the shadowy tulpa image we burned into the environmental medium. Chris and Donna saw the objects, but they saw them differently than those of us who knew what they were. Chris and Donna saw the tulpas we had created based on those objects. But wait, there's one thing I neglected to tell you. One very important thing. Maybe even the key to you seeing tulpas and a lot more. Before each one of those subjects fixated on the item. Before Chris and Donna fixated on the tulpa, each and every person spent a few minutes entering the theta brain state by using Tibetan emos. What are those? Well, the human brain produces a great deal of electricity, perhaps as much as 10 watts. A relatively small number of brain waves wired together could power a light bulb. The electricity that comes from your wall outlet oscillates, pulsates, or switches 60 times per second. That means the current flows at 60 hertz. Well, your brain current also switches at various hertz. And by measuring these different hertz, we can divide normal brain activity into four basic states, delta, theta, alpha, and beta. When the brain produces 15 to 40 hertz, it's in the most active state, which is beta. One engaged in conversation, reacting quickly and efficiently, is in this state. If one takes a break perhaps using the restroom, and is reflecting alone. The current lowers to the alpha state, which is 9 to 14 hertz. One in meditation or deep focused thought, such as working on a hard math problem, is usually in the theta state, which is 5 to 8 hertz. At 1.5 to 4 hertz, the lowest frequency, delta, is usually only reached during sleep. Monks, seers, and those who enter so-called psychic states, like remote viewers and precognitives, are usually in a theta state. However, it can be difficult for some to switch into this state at will, but there is one simple method that can be used to make the brain automatically enter this state. It's generally known as the Ganzfeld technique. By placing a small translucent dome over each eye and staring at a light source, the mini domes take up the entire range of vision, including peripheries. This leaves no edges or contrasts on which the eyes can focus. Now, once the brain determines there is nothing to distract the eyes, it automatically shifts into a theta state within a few minutes. Since the light still stimulates the optic nerve, it is better than simply using complete darkness. Not only does this produce a profound sense of peace and stress reduction, but it also opens one's third eye to perceive psychic phenomena. After lots of study with this technique, I realized the Tibetans had also known this technique can be employed. And therefore, I had Tibetan instant meditation orbs, otherwise known as Tibetan emos, created specifically for ESP and psychic experiments. The domes fit comfortably over the eyes and provide the optimum experience, lowering your brain into the theta state and allowing you to not only relax and de-stress, but also perceive tulpas and other spiritual phenomena. I implore those of you listening to this to reproduce the tulpa experiment I have described for yourself, and perhaps even expand it to a much greater scale. But regardless of whether you are a group experimenter or just someone who wants to experience the other side, a set of proper Tibetan emos is an absolute must. The experiment I have described so impressed me that I will be digging much deeper into this technique and its implications. And I hope you will keep me informed of the experiments you produce and experiences you have taking this knowledge and these tools to the next level. Don't take my word for it. See for yourself. And if you are one of those people who is interested in obtaining some Tibetan emos, you will find them in my curiosity shop for $24.95, including shipping and handling. We're getting low on our supply of these. We've sold thousands of them over the years, but we're getting very low on our supply. But that is probably the clearest, most succinct overview that I can give you of the tulpa phenomenon and all of its profound implications and how that you and we can all learn from this. So I hope that you will go check out this photograph that this gentleman sent me of what could be the tulpa of a little boy that his family has created. Might be a very rare tulpa picture. And if you just go to joshuapwarren.com, there is no period after the P. And like I said, you scroll all the way down there. Hopefully you'll look at all the good stuff on the way down. But when you get to the bottom, just click the words. And most people won't even notice them. The words, they say tulpa pic. No explanation. You click that, and this picture will come up, and you can see for yourself. And while you're there, I hope that you will also check out my upcoming huge event in Las Vegas, Finding Your Magic, How to Hack Reality. I mentioned in a recent podcast, any rooms in my block that I have reserved that have not been reserved are all going to be released on April the 15th. That's in about 10 days. So this is it. That's stipulated by my MGM contract. So if you want to come to my event, I'm telling you, this is not a bluff. You better go ahead and sign up right now, or you're not going to get to experience this. JoshuaPWarren.com, no period after the P. Also, you know, this podcast, hey, it's always free. It's always short. It's called Joshua P. Warren Daily. You'll find a link there at my website, and you'll see different ways you can subscribe, or you can follow me on Twitter, at Joshua P. Warren, and I will tweet when a new one is available. That's it for today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Thank you for staying curious. And I will talk to you again soon.